This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
White lightning while I'm still in the crib. A moon pie smeared all over my bib. Punched my first grade teacher right straight in the mouth. 'Cause that's how we do it in the dirty South. Tattoo here on my back. Yeah, my ears are still ringing from the NASCAR track. Yeah, I punched Jeff Gordon right straight in the mouth. Yeah, 'cause that's how we do it in the dirty South.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, seeking nothing more than your hearts and minds, seeking to enlighten your musical life. It is the podcast, the only show in existence where you can turn to find some perspective in these chaotic musical times. A filter, a trusted voice, we hope. Thrilled you're with us today, folks. Delighted. Thanks for tuning us in. On the P2 Podcast, once again, I'm Phil Pritchett. How you doing? Man, oh man, getting some good response from last week. Boy, we're kicking off the show with that Gary Floater, man. The full band, Dirty South, Gary Floater classic. Just had to kick it off here for the second week in a row. Play it right at the top of the show. Loving that Gary Floater. That's going to be on the forthcoming Blueprint Garage Volume 3. Can you believe we got three of these things? What other artist in Texas music is going to put out B-sides, basement tapes, and demos? Mercifully, none others. Is that right? Mercifully, no one else. Oh, I don't know about mercifully. I'd love to hear some other guys. Back catalog, ghost tracks. I'm always surprised, though, that most people don't have them. I'm always ask guys, like, hey, man, do you have anything you haven't put on a record? You know, maybe something you recorded that didn't make it out. Always very few. I guess everybody goes into the studio with a real clear idea of what they are trying to accomplish. I wish I could say that. That's why I got my own studio after a while. I would never be able to afford the studio time required to satiate my appetite for experimentation, exploration, and playing long covers to, explore sounds and ways of doing things. That's what you have on the P2 Podcast. I'm sorry, on Blueprint Garage Volume 3. We hope you enjoy it, folks. Look for that coming out here in the coming weeks. Some responses to, oh gosh, y'all are so nice. I've already gotten some emails from folks about coming out to their house to play. We were talking about the great private parties that we have played here recently, about my friend Phil Van Beck playing his 40th birthday party up there in Allen. What a blast that was. And how it got the band Stu and Blue talking in the van on the way back about just how much fun that is. We're like, man, how can we just do more of these types of shows? You know, to where people don't have to go downtown to some place and pay to park and pay a lot of money to get into the venue and all that. Man, we need to make it to where it's just real easy to include us, include the full band in your party plans, man, just around the house or around the, you know, around the ranch or wherever. Some of y'all already testing the waters there. Thank you very much. We're going to try to do them all. We're going to try to make them all work. Maybe I'll just do a tour of your houses. How about that? Maybe set aside a year to where the full band, saying we're not playing any public shows at all. Every show will be private. Would you want to host a Pritchett show in your backyard? You know, and clear a few things with the cops and the neighbors, that kind of thing. Or we can, you know, go inside of a garage or a, you know, some sort of other, you know, venue type thing or building that you have access to. A private show, man, that way you only get other people in the know there. I don't know, man. It's intriguing. These are the things I think about. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Tell me if I'm right or am I wrong. I need to know from you. Well, 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 we are eagerly anticipating my friends Mark Baker, former P2 drummer. He played on Phil World and played in my high school band, the Suburbans, and my good old friend Cunningham for dropping by last week. Wes will be joining us again here in our second segment, talking about those early days, man, trying to just give a little perspective here on today's crazy times by looking back at my own past. I'm like, well, how was it really when I started out? What were my goals, my ideas about what making music was, or recording, or, you know, what were my expectations? I learned a lot by looking back at just kind of how we got to where we are now, trying to gain some perspective on where we may be headed. So, man, we are getting ready to record, to rehearse. We're going to go back here in the A room at Trinidad. It's a great place to rehearse because you get your own headphone mix and everything. But I'm going to go ahead and record it. I don't know if I'm going to tell these guys I'm going to record it. Wes and Baker. Maybe I'll just, you know, hit the record button and see what we turn up with. But it's a great way to rehearse. You know, you just record, go through the stuff, record it, and then you can bounce down some mixes and email them everybody. Hey, here's what we did the other day. And everybody kind of, it prevents you really from having to do another rehearsal. Rehearsing's for cowards, as the Jackson Brown song says. that's a motto of mine, but the Suburbans have not played for 20 years, so I don't think one evening of rehearsal is going to, you know, change things that much. So we probably need to at least do that. So that is what we'll be doing here, doing a little rehearsing. So Cunningham's going to drop by and talk about those early days with the Suburbans and just how my whole musical experience got started. Remember when Gary P. Nunn was here? I asked him about his early musical years. God, I love hearing that. I love hearing how people get started in this thing. It's always very fascinating to me. And really one of the reasons I started this podcast, you know, and having different people, friends of mine, from friends of mine to people that, you know, you go see live, like whoever, Owen Temple or Max Dolling, Pat Green, guys like that. You know, seeing how they came about music, how they got into it. Always very interesting. So I'm going to try to answer some of those questions for myself and, of course, for you, the fan, and how we got here. I just remember, man, gosh, it was just so hard to practice because of the noise, man. No one's parents wanted you practicing in their house. You bands out there know what I'm talking about. Always an issue, always a problem. We got into this phase where we tried to put egg crates on the walls. I remember the, like, actual egg cartons with the, you know, little bulbs, the eggs thing sticking out. We'd tack them to the wall like that was going to make it quiet on the outside of the room. Of course, it was just loud as hell no matter what you did. Drums crashing away. You know, no one even heard of like earplugs in the 80s. I don't think anybody was wearing earplugs. Everybody just went deaf. That's probably where we're all headed. So, yeah, we're always in like someone's bedroom or someone's garage with no air conditioning. That was always how we did it. Texas, man, just at ear-splitting levels. And the other thing we never had was that no one ever had a PA. No one ever had good vocal amplification. You know, we all had a guitar, bass, guitar amp, bass amp, drums. We all had that. But you could never hear the vocals at a rehearsal. You know, we were always like plugging a mic into like a guitar amp, you know, into like a Roland Jazz Chorus or something. Or a PV Bandit 65, which is an old PV amp or something. And you just tried to, you know, dial it up, put a little reverb on it, and just stick the amp on the bed or something. So, and, hey, there's the vocals, check too, you know, and just ear splitting feedback that drop you to the floor occasionally when the mic would turn towards the speaker. Fun, fun, fun. This is how we did it. This is how we got to where we are, you know. But, yeah, I could never hear the vocals. So I got used to just playing and singing with nothing, man, just with no being able to hear myself. But, you can feel the notes in your head when you're off key. The vibrations kind of kick in. Y'all know what I'm talking about? I don't know. But, yeah, to this day, man, if my monitor doesn't work or something, I don't care. I'm just always like, yeah, whatever. It's no big deal to me at all. God, these bands just spend hours sound checking with their in-ear monitors, and their, it just takes forever. I'm just kind of like, dude, I just don't even care. I don't even, you know, it's great if you have a speaker and you monitor at your feet and you hear yourself a little bit. Hey, cool, that's just a bonus, but I certainly don't require it. And I don't know, maybe it's just from all those band practices we had. And we had band practice all the time, man, just get together, work on songs, you know, covers. We always had some gig coming up. Even if it was weeks off, we'd just be rehearsing, you know, just going over stuff and not rehearsing what we knew. That was just it. We didn't know how to do anything. So the first band before the Suburbans, All in One, I think we practiced mostly at Morgan Mayberry's house. The drummer. We always practiced at the drummer's house. because he didn't want to move all of his drums. He had the most gear. So, yeah, just in his bedroom or out in his garage. So his drums were always set up, and we had a couple of amps and, you know, like broomsticks with a mic, like duct taped to it. It was always something like that, something wild. And, but man, I just remember, God, I remember the fights. Sometimes we get in just really, people get upset and leave, and always a lot of dissension occasionally. But man, I also remember just grooving along on something like a new song or, man, learning those early Beatles songs, realizing we could play some of them, and just how really thrilling that was for me. It just, you know, no one was teaching us anything. I mean, I'd taken a few lessons, you know, to start playing, but we were just forging ahead on our own. And it was, I don't know, man, a liberating experience to be making that music and learning how to do stuff and, you know, finding a harmony. Oh, I'll sing this, da na na na. I'll sing that right above what you're singing. And it sounds good. And then you start working it. Yeah, great idea. I mean, it was amazing. So anyway, that's what really led us to, naturally, to recording our first band, me and Wes's first band, All in One, went to the studio, and like our freshman year of high school, and it was hilarious. Oh, you know what? I don't think I had the nerve to play it, on the air. If there's some sort of outcry, if there's some sort of groundswell that I need to play a track from it at some point, email me, demand it. What does Phil do? He listens to the fans and he responds. If I detect a groundswell, if I detect enough interest and want to risk my reputation and all that I have on the airways of Texas and the internet streams out there by playing some of my ninth grade material, that's going to get risky. That's going to get very risky, but hilarious. I still listen to it. It's like looking at an old picture of yourself in like middle school or something, you know, and it's endearing, but it's also embarrassing. You know, you cringe, you laugh, but, you know, but by the time I was in the Suburbans, oh man, we were big time. We'd already written a lot of songs as All in One. We'd been through bands, we'd broken up. So this era right here, rehearsing for our high school reunion coming up here. And, you know, Mark Baker on drums, Wes Cunningham coming in here to, record as the Suburbans, a little rehearsal here. I'm very excited. And then in the vault today, second segment, Wes is going to be here. We're going to talk about the Suburban days here, a little bit and what were we thinking and how it led us to here, here in the second segment. And then we're going to, actually play some of our album, The Suburbans in Color, tape. We're going to play a cassette tape. Can you believe it? What other show's going to play a cassette tape on it? Oh, that takes a lot of nerve. I must be crazy. I don't know. But, yeah, it's been rolling around somebody's car. This was a tape recorded in 1988 or whatever it was, 1989. So it's kind of, you know, between songs, you can hear the music on the other side of the tape going backwards. You young people don't have any idea what I'm talking about. But trust me, it was bizarre. The tape, cassette tape. So that will be in the vault. Something worth note, I think, is that, the three of us, the Suburbans, we did all go on to music-based, careers. I think that's really rare. I've had a lot of bands come in here rehearsing for their high school reunion, and you know, you basically have my good friend over here in his slacks and button-down shirt guzzling a Dos Equis, trying to play a solo on his guitar. His mind's still at work. He's trying to get into that place. Gosh, you know, how do we do this? Just trying to find that creative space maybe he had in high school. It's very hard to get, but you know, I've done my deal pretty much consistently since college, and Mark Baker's played with Ministry. He's always played drums. And a bunch of other real hardcore bands. And Wes has been in, he's been in movies. We talked about that last week. And has always written music and then publishing deals and record deals and all kinds of stuff. So it is interesting that the three of us always did music, you know. So I feel like we're going to do okay back there. It's not like we're just going to be starting at square one, dusting off the songs and the guitars and stuff. I hope we're up to it. I hope I'm up to it because I got to play bass in this band. And I love playing bass, though. Most of the projects I produce here at Trinidad World Recording Studios, I end up playing bass on, which I like. You control a lot playing bass. It's the rhythm and the melody all in one kind of deal. Makes sense? Well, he's out there in the hall, shuffling around, pouring himself cup after cup of coffee. Wes Cunningham. Yes, he's got his new movie coming out, Saronia. We'll let you know when that hits, when you're able to see that. He's starring in that film, based on his life, loosely based on his life. But he's going to come in here, and we're going to talk about the suburban days, man, and maybe what to expect from these rehearsals. Fun stuff. And then stay tuned for The Vault, man. We're going to play some actual recordings. I've had a lot of emails on this over the year. Man, play some of your old high school recordings, man. It's a shame I don't have the actual, like, DATs, you know, like digital tapes I could make a good transfer from, you know, or remaster them or something. So this is just basically a tape, a cassette tape, you know, is being played into my system here. I've done a couple little EQ things just to try to make it a little more palatable for you folks out there in crystal clear old radio land. So we'll see how it goes. Daring to play tapes, talking about the old days, the Suburbans. Stay tuned. Wes is coming up here on the P2 Podcast.
Takes her top off when we go to the lake. Yeah, she's soft and sexy, but she's mean as a snake. If I catch you looking at her, I'll punch you straight in the mouth. Yeah, that's how we do it in the dirty south. Was a hell of a time.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. You should already feel a little more enlightened, a little more in the know, a little smarter just by tuning in. Congratulations, you have found us. Here we are. Bless you all, folks. Phil Pritchard here, Trinidad World Recording Studios. Well, man, we got so much response from last week. From my good friend Wes Cunningham dropping by, talking about the film that just erupted here. And all of a sudden, just everything came into focus, and they were shooting in L.A. Filming his life, talking about music, Saronia, the movie starring my old friend Cunningham. Excellent stuff, man. He joins us here again this week. Wes Cunningham is here, coming up from his native Waco, his new hometown. Welcome, Cunningham. Good
Welcome.
To see you again.
Greetings from Waco.
Thanks for coming back.
Man, I love being here.
Love it. It's a delight. It's a delight to have you
here. The World Recording Studios in Trinidad.
Oh, it's amazing.
That's a beautiful place.
Well, man, things are just a flutter around here because a few years back, we start getting aggressive emails from our student class president at the upcoming high school reunion for our high school. Oh, man. Wes and I were the artist guys, you know, while many of our fellow classmates were, you know, enjoying triumph on the high school football field or baseball or getting all the girls. We were practicing for hours
or hanging out with girls.
Yes.
Right? We were not.
We were making ourselves deaf playing in a garage with a PV Bandit
singing
amp.
Singing songs about girls.
Singing songs about girls filled with angst, dipping snuff, sweating, and just rock. That's how I spent my high school, really. And so we formed the band. Last week we went through All in One and the Suburbans. But our real band that people would maybe remember, maybe some of our classmates, who knows, the Suburbans. I played bass, Cunningham guitar, Mark Baker on the drums. Well, we
tight
made a
tight little three-piece.
Tight little three-piece.
Yeah.
And our student class president, the great Jay Ellis. Was he the president or was Spencer Cochran?
See, I don't even think Jay was in the
pantheon. He's just taking this thing over, hadn't he?
Yeah, he just wants to hear the Suburbans.
Yeah,
playing.
So he wants to. So anyway, there's been some little
God bless him.
I mean, a little demand out there.
Anybody who wants to hear, you know, us play, I'll come play.
That's right. So we get the hey man, come on, for the reunion, the Suburbans have got to get up and play a couple songs.
Uh-huh.
So this whole drama has been unfolding now for almost a year. So we're here. We are, man.
Uh-huh.
What's your what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, you know, driving up. I haven't heard that.
We have the benefit of having a lot of recordings. I think a lot of high school bands, I've had them in here rehearsing for their high school deal. They just played some covers. They didn't. Now we had, 100 original songs or 60 or something.
It doesn't sound so unique these days because everybody's got, you know, recording gear in their dorm room. But back in the 80s.
Yeah, having a tape.
It was quite a thing to go to the recording studio and to do the reel-to-reel.
And have a tape and
use actual.
It was a cool thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was always traipsing around the halls of high school with the shoebox full of tapes. You say, hey, man, you want to buy a tape of the band? You know,
right.
$5. I can't remember what it sold them for, but.
Well, true. Well, you know, me and you we started writing songs in eighth grade, and I remember, because we were both into Lennon and reading that Lennon biography.
Yes.
And, I mean, I distinctly remember I wrote one song, and I was like, all right, I'm ready to go to the studio.
Yeah, let's do it.
So I started looking up studio. How do I do that?
Obsessed with the Beatles, yeah.
And then, of course, once you step into a studio and you realize the thing you're, you know, kind of banging around on your guitar, I mean, it's just a drug, you know.
Yeah, it is.
So it just screwed my life up.
That was the end
of
it.
I would much rather have not had that moment. I mean, maybe it was that book I read. If I had, you know, I could have done something else with my life, really.
Ray Coleman's biography.
That's right.
Lennon.
Yeah, that's
a very in retrospect, a very glowing biography.
Oh, of course. I didn't want to read anything else.
Anything real. This just has John just picking daisies on the
right. John was
the last
cynical
day of his life.
Pensive.
Yeah.
Thoughtful for the world.
He was happier than he'd ever been. Then he was shot.
Yes. All he wanted was love.
Yeah. Just like, then you read some other thing like, he was so smacked out on heroin that day. I'm just like, oh, what?
That's
you
when
know?
I go, la, 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 la. No, man, you know,
all
I'm
the
driving,
gory details. I'm just like, come on. You
so,
know.
So driving up, here's what's wonderful about music and making music for yourself is that, you know, I'm listening to that cassette.
Yes.
And, it says a couple of things really that my car still has a cassette player. But anyway, so I'm, but I'm thinking, you know, I'm remembering the smell of the place,
know,
and I remember just the nuances of a slightly off, you know, key note or moment. And
isn't it crazy? You said, I remember every just little bing or a little bing or this one with the bass note kind of bleh, I just a little flatness, lit it up.
Yeah.
You just remember every little, we've heard it so much.
Right.
Even though I haven't maybe listened to it in 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
When it starts playing, you know exactly what's happening next.
Totally. And it's different amazing. From like some classic rock song that you've always heard, like a Brown Eyed Girl. You know the nuances of that too. But having made it, there's a whole three-dimensional quality to it, and you can step into that song and sort of even walk around the rooms where we did them. I was cringing. I was thinking, oh my. And then I thought, and then I was so proud of that 18-year-old kid, you know, who wrote that stuff. And I was, oh, what a lovely voice he had.
And then
singing about my high school, you know, girlfriend. Use that term loosely. Never really was my girlfriend. I wanted her to be my girl. So it was, you know, all of these feelings and it's
fuel for inspiration. Yeah.
Oh, it's just, it's great, man. It's like looking through an old photo album, but it all just sort of comes to life again.
Yeah. That's, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I've got and those tapes, gosh, we need to, I've got them on, so I've got some cassettes laying around. It's weird being in the studio, how much you're spoiled with sound. You put those tapes on and
Totally.
I'm just like, God, did it always sound this bad?
Yeah.
The tapes, man. It's a tape. It sounds like crap. I'm like, I know, but I don't remember it sounding this bad. But, you know, you're sitting here used to just perfect digital crystal clear sound. You know, every time you play back the drums.
Remember that in
the
between
bass.
The songs, you kind of hear it going backwards.
Yeah, on the other side of the tape. Yeah, that was always a big strategy because you're making a tape.
You're like, wait a minute, is this on the front side or the B side? You're like, well, look, man, it's the A side's got to be this long. Because if you put this song on the second side, you're going to have like three minutes of blank tape.
That's right.
A lot of strategy in how you flipped over the tape.
Yeah.
Of course, the guys listening today just going, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, you had like a physical thing you were printing it on, you know. It's just bizarre. But yeah, man, so what else do you got as far as, I don't know, what do you expect? We got Bate coming in here to practice. We're going to go back in the rehearsal space here.
Here's what's I didn't expect to be, you know, when this whole 20-year really, you know, it's almost like you don't have a choice. If you say, I don't want to get up and play old songs.
You look like a jerk.
Then you just look like a jackass if you don't, like a self-righteous, a pretentious, you know. Yeah. It's a no-win. So, you know, kids out there, you better write really good songs if you're still in high school, if you have to go back and play. So, you know, I was thinking, I have no choice. We have to do this.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it, then you got to rehearse because you can't get up there. But you can't rehearse too much.
No, exactly.
Because then you're going to look like you're trying too hard. And then people are going to look at you and be like, oh, that's pitiful. They're still trying to rock, you know.
Yeah, look at
remember
these guys.
The glory day. And so it's –
they're expecting us all to come over and start
watching.
Here's
my thing.
Them, you know?
I screw all those people. What I discovered today driving up here was that we've got some really fun – music, and it's going to be fun to play it.
And some people will be surprised how much they remember it. Like, oh, I remember this song. I used to have the tape, you know, I think.
Totally. I think it'll be great, man. I think it's going to be a blast. So.
I think it'll be fun. It's all in your, you're right. I think it's just your approach has to be right. You know, you can't just, man, we got to.
Yeah.
Have we settled on how many songs we're going to play? I think that's important. Because it should be said, other classmates of ours play music or started playing music. So there's other.
Right.
This event is Friday night, and you know, everybody's just going to be milling around. I haven't seen each other in a long time.
Yeah.
The focus is going to be on seeing people.
Well, here's the thing. Getting a musician to stop playing is kind of hard, so we really do need to come up. Because really, I can see myself really getting into this and us being like, we'll just do a whole show. And, you know,
yeah, man,
people don't have that. They don't want to see that. Yeah. Just give them three or four songs.
Three or four songs.
Let them talk some
pretty
more.
Pretty fun, yeah. Right.
I think that's the thing. You know, I'm thinking three or four, maybe have one callback if we need to.
Right.
Yeah, we're not going to be throwing in the cover tunes.
You know, because I'm such a pro now. Of course, I'm famously with my band. I'm not real into the gear. I'm always like, hey man, just give me a mic, a couple speakers on sticks, we'll rock the house.
Yeah.
But that seems to be what's happening with this thing. You know, they're just kind of like, hey man, this guy's bringing a little PA, a couple speakers. You know, there's no. I'm kind of like, so man, we're not going to be like mic'd up. I'm just kind of like,
well, no, exactly. Now you're thinking, well, just, if we're going to go through this trouble.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of like, well, now wait a minute. Now, do I have control? Can I walk over? Is there going to be a head on the stage that I can go over and turn up Cunningham's vocal, or can I go over and?
It's going to be a nightmare.
Well, you know, I'm just trying. I'm kind of like, you know, I don't want to. We don't want to look silly, you know. I don't know. I mean, of course, nobody cares.
No,
the only people that cares is me and you
and Jay Ellis
and Mark Baker. God love them all.
Right.
Oh well. Well, man, what are we thinking to play? Our upbeat stuff. God, we had a lot of long, kind of morose.
This can't be interesting to anybody listening, can it?
Well, no, man, it's the high school reunion show. Hell yeah, it's interesting. To me, anyway. Maybe we'll play some Suburban songs in the vault today.
That's a good idea.
Get out. Let people know what we're talking about. People's going, what are you talking about, Phil? You guys sucked. Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Yeah, well. What can
listening
you do?
To the your old band.
You're
you know what really stood out to me? We were talking about this.
What stood out to me is I was nostalgic when I was 18. I was like, oh, remember the days.
Remember being a freshman?
Like every one of my songs is like some mournful, you know, passing
innocent
of youth.
Innocent lost, yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? Get out there and have some fun.
You got your whole life ahead of you.
That's right.
It's not all over.
Yeah, that's a good thing to talk about. The funny things we wrote about, you know, the things that were important, you know.
Oh, well, you know what else is really funny? Making records now, you have bands come in here, and man, drummers look at you just go, man, what do you want me to play? Play me the click track. I want to stick to this. Bass guys just man, stay in the one and the five. Boom, boom, boom. You want to be good. You want to be on the radio, man. Can't leave that click. Can't leave that click. Boom, doing nothing fancy. A lot of that's just country roots rock kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the Suburbans, I was a bass player, man. I played with a pick. I played with a lot of mid-range tone. Because the guys in the 80s, man, like, you know, Adam Clayton or, you know, Geddy Lee of Rush or Sting for the Police, They were very busy on the bass.
What was the guitar
the
era?
Drums were very busy. The guitar was busy. Everybody was pretty busy.
Yeah.
Or not busy, but everyone really sought to carve their niche. Where did we start? Because in the 80s, man, if you were in a band or something, our mantra was just, man, we need to be original, man. Like Lost Cause. They were an older band, you know, of guys. We've got to be original. Got to write our own songs. Got to be original. And I wanted people to think, man, he's a good bass player.
Covers, a-hole.
No, man. So I was always stretching to play different notes and do different stuff. So was Bake on the drums, and so were you as a writer. But bands today, or at least in this Roots deal, they're all seeking to, man, here are the sounds. We want to sound just like that. We don't want to go outside the bounds, and radio's not going to play it if it's kind of weird. And there seems to be all these. I'm like, wait a minute.
Interesting.
When I was coming up, it was all about being freaky, being out there, being original.
I think there's a couple of things. I think we were very much in the Eddie Van Halen school, where it's like, what kind of runs can you do?
Yeah.
And so I think everybody in their own way is doing runs.
Everyone wanted to be thought
whether
of as
good.
You're
a drummer doing these elaborate fills, or whether you're, you know, whatever you're doing. You want to stand out and say, look at me.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, why else do you get on stage? You know? I mean, just a
boo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah. And, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's like that in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
You know, Bake was kind of our drummer, Mark Baker. Of course, Phil Pritchard fans will know him. He played drums on Phil World, the first solo record I made. That's Bake playing all that. He was my drummer for a couple of years. We reunited, and he was a great drummer. Of course, by then, man, he had all the tattoos, you know, and he went on to play with did he play with Ministry, the band? That's what I always heard.
Uh-huh.
Al Jorgensen. Bake was kind of a hardcore guy. It was funny because we were playing all these frat parties, you know. And Bake was my drummer. He's got all these piercings and just tattoos. He's just smoking, you know. And,
well, we tried to write Beatles songs too. We're playing. What strikes me as well is that we're playing melodic music. We're doing harmonies and we're singing stuff like that. And I don't know. It wasn't. We weren't out there to try
plowing ahead and just kind of
didn't have a whole lot of anger. No. It was more just
that's right.
let's try to make beautiful stuff.
Well, it was tough on Bake because taking that a step further was my early career where he was my drummer and he'd already been in some more punkier bands and stuff like that, and trying to get him to. I mean, hell, we had to play like Redneck Mother and stuff just to fill out the night at some dance. Just Bakes just got all these dudes in their khaki pants. Just, hey, man, you know.
Yeah, he's just there going, living on sponge cake.
Just playing that. Yeah, he's back there just playing.
Watching the sun.
He had a cigarette holder. He had a cigarette holder at one time, like the long plastic thing with the cigarette in it, you know.
I don't remember that.
He'd walk out and kind of give it just, man, these people, man, this is all BS. I'm like, man, just get through it, man. Just, you know, whatever.
The things you do for your $100.
That's right.
At the end of the night.
But he was cool, man. I mean, he was great. And then, but we hadn't seen him. I haven't seen him much since then at all. He came to a couple of Pritchett gigs.
Yeah.
After I had another drummer and stuff early.
Now, let's go back to this record real quick. I'm taking over your
go ahead.
Your,
what do you got?
The leadership. You
got? Yes.
Now.
Which one?
Well, we didn't have the last one we did, the big one. It had like
17 songs?
Yeah, a million songs on it.
The Suburbans, In Color.
In Color, the Suburbans, some great music on there.
Absolutely.
But we didn't have enough money to go record it, from what I remember. We
were trying to make, are you ready, a CD.
That's right.
But no one really had CDs yet.
Yeah.
It was very expensive.
I forgot, that's right.
Remember? Yep. We had the tapes, and we were like, man, we're going to release a CD.
But I remember, we were both freshmen at our respective universities.
Right.
Myself at Cambridge and you and you
yes know.
And I remember filling out forms. I had these forms that I Xeroxed, and you could pre-order a tape. You check for a tape or a CD, a compact disc, or you know, there was a funny little one for 8-track. You could check that, but that wasn't real. That was
just for fun.
But so then I went around and we tried to get money that way, people pre-ordering.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that. I forgot about that.
And
then we even had a fundraiser. Remember up in my bedroom, like over Christmas holiday, we invited.
Yeah, I remember that.
Alice was there.
Oh, investors.
Investors.
Oh, no.
We invited investors to come.
I forgot. And, no wonder I forgot about this.
And pledge $100 or $200, and
to raise money,
and then we'll put your name on the record. I thought it was very progressive thinking.
We'll sell at least 5,000.
Totally, We're going to...
That'll be $25,000. We'll pay you back. Then that way we'll have $22,000 or something. We had some business plan, didn't we, or something?
We totally had a business plan.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, the real reward was getting mentioned in the album art. And
that's right. That's
really
right.
Just being a band backer, a benefactor.
A benefactor of the band.
People who have been foolish enough to be my benefactors throughout the years know the sting. But back then, that was the beginning. And,
golly, man. I forgot about the fundraiser. In our own honor. We're throwing our own fundraiser.
And it worked. I mean, we got enough.
Yeah, we got a little money. Yeah, we did.
I don't know that we paid it out on the back end.
I think I might owe J.J. Sedrith $100 or something.
I want to tell you something, Phil.
What's that kind of
that? That tape.
Yeah.
You know, it never made it outside of our backpacks. You know,
our friends got it.
Well,
yeah,
we
right.
threw them around to our friends. But if somebody heard that tape, and I stand by this.
Uh-oh. As we're getting into the vault, now we're going to really put it on the line.
Put it on the line. I mean,
somebody heard it.
You know, this was years before Hootie and all that garbage.
Oh,
and
Cunningham throwing
all
Hootie
that
out of the bus.
All that simple, nice, melodic right. garbage that came out.
We did
you
it
know.
First.
We did it first.
That's right. We invented it.
And it was, there was heart. And I'm telling you, if that record was heard by any, you know, ding dong in Nashville who had a key to some door.
Yeah.
I really think it would be other people would have heard it because
I think so.
It's astonishing what 18-year-olds did without any producer any kind of instruction. It's all self-taught in every way.
Yeah.
Just from reading, listening to records, and we got together and we made these beautiful songs and if you don't want to listen to it after all this PR, I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
Now you really got to play something.
Well, we will play some selections. Now, hold on. You must keep in mind this is from a tape that was made in 1989 that we're going to put in here. This show is broadcast on some radio stations around Texas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. We're syndicated,
I take back
man.
Everything I said. It's
syndicated. Everyone's on the edge of their seat now. Well, we're going to play a warbly high-endless tape in the vault, The Suburbans in Color. We'll take some selections from that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I will let you know my thoughts. In the vault, The Suburbans, next. Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here, folks, on the P2 Podcast. Welcome all. Remember cassette tapes? Remember tapes? That's what we have for you right here in the vault, folks. Where else are you going to turn on your radio, your computer, fire up the iPod after downloading the podcast? What are the shows going to bring you? Cassette tape. In high lossful fidelity. Well, that's what we have here today. After talking to my good friend Cunningham, thank you for coming by, Wes. He had to go on back down the road. But we certainly appreciate him dropping by today, sharing memories of our high school band, The Suburban. And that is what The Suburbans, and that is what we're celebrating, looking back on here today. I'm just going to play, I don't know if I'm going to play full songs from this stuff. Well, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? That's one called Your Secrets right here. Yeah, that's Wes on a lead vocal, of course, playing guitar. And that's me on bass, backing vocal, I think.
Mark Baker, our great drummer, he was really good. Man, good sounding stuff. We recorded this at Patrick McGuire Recording in Arlington, Texas, where I did, I recorded Phil World there. I recorded the album Tougher Than the Rest there at Patrick McGuire's, and several other projects that I produced, and I mixed Phil Comes Alive there. So anyway, a lot of work with Patrick over the years. I just knew him from these days in high school. So you know what? Not bad for a bunch of 18, 19-year-old kids, this tape. We're kind of looking back at it here. Interestingly enough, the Suburbans in the Vault. You know, this next song we played at our high school talent show, at the big high school talent show, it's a fun deal, you know. The auditorium's just packed with people, and people get up there and do silly stuff, or, you know, a football player shows his sensitive side by getting up and singing a slow song with his guitar. That's what we celebrated. So anyway, we were the Suburbans, and we were going to play a couple songs. So for this next song, we had this silly, fun song. You can see where I get some of my Latin-infused stuff. A little bit later, we'll indeed play Katarina, which was originally a Suburban song. Phil in high school, do you believe that? Still playing it today. So anyway, we got up on the stage at the high school talent show and played this song called Chicks Dig Us. Chicks Dig Us. Latin-infused, fun, fast at the end. Me and Cunningham were splitting the vocals here, singing the harmonies. Me and Wes on vocal, and then Baker panning away on the drums. Chicks Dig Us. Silly, fun, high school, the Suburbans. Check it out. Much better than I even remember it. Not bad for a bunch of high school kids. Chicks I dig ass. Oh, fun, fun, fun. Pritchett in high school playing bass. When we finished playing that song at the auditorium, during it, man, I was really jumping around a lot at the end of the song. It got real fast. We were jumping around. We had three of our friends, girls, on the stage as backup singers. They were all dressed up, and they had kind of tambourines and stuff. And so we had backup singers. We had this whole production thing for this. And at the end of it, I fell back over the drum set as the curtain was closing, kind of crashed through the drums, kind of like a Keith Moon, kind of like The Who or something. And the crowd, this is my memory of it anyway. Forgive me, anyone out there who doesn't remember like this, but standing ovation. Am I right or am I wrong? Am I right or am I wrong? Just a performance of a lifetime. That just set me on a course. I don't know, for better or worse, I have no idea. But here I am today, rest assured. Chicsadigas. Well, always loving the Latin-infused stuff of the Suburbans. This features yours truly, Phil, on lead vocal. I brought this song to the band in high school kind of late in the game. It wasn't like anything else we had on the album at that time. About my babysitter, Katarina. And I mean, what's funny about it, we played the piano solo in the middle, but it was kind of complex. So Wes played the down rhythm part, the bong, 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 bong. And then I used a hand on the top part of the keys going. So there's a cool kind of piano part in here. It sounds kind of complicated because there's like three or four hands playing the piano at the same time. That's how we recorded back in those days. So here's the original studio version. Phil on lead vocal, Katarina.
Well, her name was Katarina, long, lean, and 17. But she was 9 years older than I was. I was a lovesick, spying fool as I watched her by the pool. She was better than anything I'd seen in school. Well, she didn't seem to mind that I followed her behind. And she'd sometimes turn around to me and wink. And I just about dropped dead as the blood rushed to my head. She'd make my day without a word being said. She was wild as the wind that blew through her hair, and as sweet as the perfume that she left in the air. She couldn't love me, but I really didn't care. Just as long as I could follow her and stare. Well, of course she had a friend, a 6'10" offensive end. And the sight of her with him brought me to tears. Katarina, can't you wait? For you know I'm only 8, but I'll be driving in just 8 short years. She was wild as the wind that blew through her hair, and as sweet as the perfume that she left in the air. And I knew she couldn't love me, but I really didn't care. Just as long as I could follow her and stare.
Beautiful audio cassette tape. Doesn't sound that bad, does it? I did a few tricks on it there. It's got a lot of hiss in there. Sorry about that, but I was trying to keep the high end present. Lost a lot of high end all the years. Lost a lot of high end on this cassette tape over the years. It's been rolling around in somebody's car, up on the dashboard, getting all warped and heat. But there it is, Katarina. God, sounds pretty good, man. The production on it. We had the percussion going on, piano, drums, harmonies. Love it. Didn't sound that good when I did it years later. Well, well, well. I like this one too. This is this closes side one of the album. Coming Home. Cunningham on vocal. Me and Baker actually sing on this one, I think, in the background. But what was funny about this one, what do you think? He got a bunch of digital sound effects in the studio back there in 1989? Absolutely not. So we wanted rain falling, rain in the radio like you were driving your car. So, man, we literally took microphones outside the studio, ran a cable out in the driveway at Pat McGuire's house, and we put two Shure 57 microphones on the dash of my Bronco 2 vehicle, automobile. And then I got in there and turned on the windshield wipers and the radio, and we sprayed a hose at the windshield, and we recorded the windshield wipers going back and forth and the water on the windshield. So that's what you're hearing there. I think the lightning and thunder was on a tape. We had a cassette tape with some thunder effects. But it's a cool little song here, a little nice, easy-going tune. Coming Home. You'll hear me open the car. At some point, there was water coming in the car because I didn't shut the door hard enough. So there's water just coming in on me the whole beginning part of this song. You hear me open the door and shut it real quick. Go, meh. Anyway, kind of funny. Coming Home, the Suburbans. It in high school, man. Loving it today. On cassette tape, in color, my old high school band here in the vault, the Suburbans. We've dug up an old tape, put it in here, flying it into the rig here in the studio, trying to do a little work just to make it sound feasible here for you on the podcast. Thanks for joining us this week, folks. Phil Pritchett here. Thanks to my good friend and ex-Suburban mate, Wes Cunningham, for dropping by, talking about all those days in high school playing. This all ties in with Blake Walker and a lot of emails I've gotten about my high school years and recordings and all that. So some interesting stuff out there, including our own Katarina, which we've been playing forever. Well, I'm going to leave you here, folks, with another tune off that Suburbans record. Thanks for bearing with me here. Thanks for letting me take this trip down memory lane with you. Hope it's been a little bit enlightening, a little fun. It sure has for me. We will see you next week on the podcast. Call me. 817-733-5256, or email me, phil@philpritchett.com, and let me know when we can come play a party for you. That's what we want to do moving forward, the future, Phil Pritchett and the full band. Invite us to your home. Let's rock it out. Going to leave you with Holy Roller here, a staple of the Suburbans era. Check it out. We'll see you next week on the podcast. Much tougher.
She lurks round with her all night round, and she gripes about her bad day. Weekend came and it drained her brain, and she put the blame on Monday. Yeah, I'm so weak. I look in with a leather scarf and a bad girl's love made her feel sad. Deep inside was a desperate cry, but I sort of thought she smelled bad. Yeah, I'm so weak. I look at people. Yeah, I'm so weak. I'm such a I'm just glad I'm not. I'm just glad I'm not.